Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Brigadier General Russell Burbage. Hi, Russell. Welcome back.
At ease.
Thank you so much for being on the show, man. This is like your, I don't know, this is not more than your fifth appearance. We've had five seasons, but you've done multiple appearances. So I don't even know what number of appearances this is for you. We are running out of ranks. I went as high as I could go. I don't know if I don't think anything's higher than Brigadier General. Maybe I got to look it up, but you're okay. You know.
Feel free to bust me down back to Corporal Captain, because that's kind of what I...
Maybe we'll have to by the time we get to season 11, for Pete's sake. So I'll figure it out. So, of course, we're here to talk about the season 5 episode. It's Hepatitis, episode 19 of the season. The original air date was February 8th, 1977. Written and directed by Alan Alda, guy that kind of knows how to do MASH. So, of course, Russell, you've been on the show multiple times, as I just said. So let's get right to the plot. Father Mulcahy comes down with hepatitis, so the doctors snap into action to make sure it doesn't sweep through the camp. Colonel Potter talks to the cook, BJ tends to Father Mulcahy, and Hawkeye has to give everyone in camp a shot of gamma globulin. That's a big enough job, but it's made more complicated by the fact that Hawkeye is having back trouble. The pain is getting worse and worse, leaving Hawkeye stooped over. First, he gives a shot to Frank, who is nothing but trouble, of course, then Margaret, where he drools over her exposed rear end. This, understandably, enrages her and barks, and she barks at Hawkeye for ogling her. Hawkeye, realizing he was out of line, apologizes. Wounded then arrive, and a particularly difficult case is among them. One soldier's stomach is almost entirely gone. Hawkeye recommends BJ take the case, since he has been reading up on the necessary procedure, which puts him one up over the rest of them. Working from a textbook, BJ pulls the soldier through, the surgery having gone flawlessly. Hawkeye continues giving the camp shots, moving from Klinger, then to Radar. While with Radar, he confides that he's been feeling insecure about how he's different than most of his other friends, who like to get drunk and consort with the various girls in town. Hawkeye gives him some wonderful, tender advice, telling him that he carries a piece of Iowa with him wherever he goes, and how he'll meet the one special woman he's been waiting for his whole life. Radar is comforted and thanks Hawkeye, only to have Hawkeye ask him to drop his pants. Later, Hawkeye finds BJ, still in need of a shot, celebrating in the officers' club. Drunk and giddy, he pulled off the surgery. BJ gets so tipsy, he collapses over a table, so Hawkeye pulls his shorts down in front of everyone and gives BJ the shot. Later, Hawkeye and Colonel Potter have drinks in Colonel Potter's office, and Potter gives him some advice about Hawkeye's back trouble. He believes Hawkeye is angry about news from home, a local Crabapple Cove doctor who, despite his average medical skills, is cleaning up back home because he has no real competition. Potter reminds Hawkeye that he only really has to worry about competing with himself. And then Potter kindly adds, and for you, that's tough enough. Potter then suggests sending the quack back home an anonymous letter. Hawkeye busts out laughing, his imagination running wild with ideas, immediately starting to feel better. All right, Russell. So from the season five episode, from all the season fives to pick from, why did you want to talk about hepatitis?
Well, this is the one that I think I love the least. Most I think I could talk about. You know, there's so much that you can talk about. Would say, oh, I love that. I love that. Oh, it makes me laugh. Oh, it's great. I feel like this one's a little bit more I can dig my teeth in and say, well, why did they do it that way? Or what's up with that? Or that kind of critiquing rather than just fawning and thinking, oh, my God, this was awesome. You know, so.
That's the show, Russell. That's the show. Is he talking about how awesome it is? What are you doing? What are you talking about?
Right. But you don't want necessarily that. You want a little bit of critique or commentary, right?
I hope. Maybe. We'll find out.
Who knows? Captain right now.
We'll see how this goes. So, okay. Now, I mean, of course, this is based on kind of a real life situation in that William Christopher came down with hepatitis for real. And that is why he is absent a good number of episodes in season five, despite the fact this was the season he got promoted to full-time regular. And we talked about that in an earlier show. I can only imagine as an actor, you must feel a little insecure that you finally got this promotion. You know, you're finally on the main credits of MASH, and then you get sick and have to miss a bunch of episodes. I'm sure that he was treated with equanimity and you know, there was no worry, but still, I imagine as a working actor, you're like, oh man, of all the times for me to come down with hepatitis the season I'm promoted, that's it. But, you know, obviously, you know, he recovered and they even got a whole episode out of it.
Yes. So, and I like that it's nominally about Father Mulcahy, and there's a great scene between Father Mulcahy and Hawkeye in the middle of the episode. But yeah, this was one of those episodes where I think it would have worked so much better as like a 45-minute or even an hour show, just because it's just, there's so much going on and it's kind of crammed into 25 minutes. Then you think, okay, yeah, that seems to work, but yeah. Go ahead. I don't want to like.
Okay, I'm really fascinated. I'm really dying to see what we're going to get to that you think maybe could have been expanded. I think about when I think about MASH hour long episodes, I think of the dictum that Ken Levine, of course, Ken Levine, who was a writer on MASH, was on this very podcast this year. He mentioned that if you see an hour long episode of a sitcom, it's because they had 40 minutes worth of content. Not 50. Like they always, he says every hour long sitcom episode is 40 minutes of plot and then 10 minutes of padding because they can never get to that full amount, but they have more than a half hour show, but not enough for a 2 hour. And then there are some hour long episodes of MASH, particularly that I can think of that are probably a little on the padded side.
Right.
Now the ones they've done so far, Bug Out and Welcome to Korea, absolutely not. Those are gangbuster hour-long episodes, but there's a couple later on that I'd say maybe didn't need to be a full hour. But yeah, I'm really going to be curious as to what scenes you're referring to. You think that could have been expanded, but we'll talk about that as we get through it. So, of course, the episode opens in the swamp with a shirtless Mike Farrell. A little something there for the ladies as he is BJ is exercising and he's doing like morning sort of calisthenics type thing, and it's bothering Hawkeye to no end because obviously Hawkeye's trying to sleep. And this is the beginning of us seeing that Hawkeye is in a lot of physical pain. He's got some sort of back injury or some sort of just problem that where he's got this, you know, he's very, very uncomfortable. So he is extra crabby. And then of course his condition is made even worse by Radar delivering the mail, and he brings his Crabapple Cove newspaper. And we're going to find out that, there is this, as I mentioned in the summary, there is a doctor that Radar knew, that Hawkeye knew back at home, Vernon Parsons. Great name, by the way. I just love that's a really distinctive name for a character, who is doing lab work, doing research involving mice, and he got a $100,000 grant. And that bothers Hawkeye on numerous levels, because first of all, in 1950s money, $100,000 was $1.2 million. So that was a big grant. That was a big, big grant. But also that, according to Hawkeye, Vernon Parsons is incredibly average. And it's only because doctors like Hawkeye are, you know, overseas that this guy is raking in this kind of cash. And we can see that is really digging at him. And he tells BJ all about it, opens his newspaper, and bang, there's another article about Vernon Parsons.
Yeah, I think that this whole thing about being upset by the incredibly average Vernon Parsons, we just jump into it too fast, right? He's already hurting, right? Hawkeye's back is already hurting. We don't know anything about Vernon Parsons. We didn't get anything about, oh, I just read yesterday about Vernon Parsons, and here he is again today. It just seems like, wait, why is you initially think that Hawkeye really does have like a back pain or something, right? But as you start to watch the episode, you begin to think that he's a hypochondriac or it's a mental blockage about, you know, not being wanting to be at in Korea. And it just seems like I don't want to say waste, but we take a little bit of time to get there. And it's just like, wait, really? Hawkeye is making himself be in pain because of somebody we've never heard of before. It just seems a little bit out of the blue.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I could see maybe building to that, but as you're saying, if the show's only 25 minutes, they don't have time for that. But yeah, it does open with him already in pain. So yeah, okay, I could see that. Yeah, you can maybe find a way to kind of, you know, grandfather it in a little bit. But it's funny, that never even really occurred to me before. But yeah, I mean, so many characters in MASH, whether we see them, sometimes we don't see them, come in and out. you know, we see them one time and they're like significant characters. Everyone knows them. It's kind of like, you know, Hanky Panky from the previous week where it's like, oh, there's Donovan and everyone knows her. And you're like, well, I've never seen this person before and I'll never will again. So I mean, everybody's moving in and out of the 4-7 very fast. So the next scene is in the mess tent where we see someone else is dealing with a problem where Father Mulcahy isn't feeling well. He's just kind of looking kind of mousy and whatever. And of course, Radar is eating Father Mulcahy's food. He talks about the grease has extra fat and or the sausages have extra grease, which is
insane. I love that whole scene with them eating and Radar taking Father Mulcahy's food. That's just comedy gold.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even waiting. You know what I mean? Like, it's like it's Father Mulcahy, all he has to do is just for one moment not eating. And Radar's like, can I take your food? Like, calm down, Radar. Give me a second. Maybe I'll eat it. Okay. We get an installment. In this scene, we get another installment of the Young Sherman Potter Chronicles, where he mentions that one time in World War I, there was no food left, so they ate turnips every day for a week. My tongue smelled like Arthur Murray's foot bath, which is just a grotesque line. But again, I love any reference to Young Sherman Potter, so I'm always happy to get one of those gags.
Well, so, from the other side of the street, the Asians love turnips. And in fact, my Japanese family, we would have turnips every morning.
Wow. Okay. Are they? I've never had it.
I'd be like, no thanks, but we're out every day. So
I've never had a turnip. Are they?
They're not great, but
are they particularly like
foul?
Yeah. Do they have like a real foul odor to them? I've never really.
Yeah.
Oh, do they?
Okay. They do. Wow. Yes. Yeah. In fact, my town in Japan, when I lived there, they were known for growing turnips, daikon and radishes and things like that. And they would pull them up off the ground and leave them hanging off bamboo, kind of like laundry sticks in their fields. And the town just reeked of turnips for days.
Boy. Okay. Oof. Okay. Well, all right.
But pickled turnips are not bad. You know, takwa, some of the yellow pickled turnips are not bad. I'll eat those, but some of the real ones that they put in miso soup or on the side of the garnishes of Asian foods, no thank you.
All right, good to know. Well, I'll continue to stay away from them. So we see that Father Mulcahy is feeling slightly arthritic, and BJ notices that, and Hawkeye notices that as well. And then, of course, all three of our doctors are getting a little worried. They check his eyes, and then they ask Father Mulcahy to look under his tongue, and Hawkeye says, that tongue's as yellow as the streak down my back. And then BJ jumps in, and he says, tells Radar, don't drink Father Mulcahy's coffee because the Swiss family hepatitis is swimming in there. And I love Radar's reaction where he acts like Father Mulcahy. He has the bubonic plague. You know, he's like, they were your sausages. I never touched them, Radar. Yeah, but they were yours. Like, he completely flips out, which is, you know, thanks, Radar. The way to make me feel great about the fact that I've got hepatitis.
Yeah, that's another scene there that I don't know. It just doesn't ring true for me. And I think Alan Alda, I guess, wrote it.
Yep.
The writer sat down and said, okay, let's throw some medical terms. So sclera instead of the whites of your eyes or icteric instead of jaundice. And it's like, oh, come on, doctors. I mean, can you just say what you're meaning without sounding, you know, like you swallowed a medical dictionary? It just sounded like they put in terms to be added later, right?
I never knew what a sclera was. I first heard the word.
Had to look it up.
Yeah, I had to look it up. I never knew what it was. I, you know, heard Hawkeye say it, but I was like, I knew it's something related to his eyes, but I didn't really know what it meant outside of that. So as we said, Colonel Potter, starts a game plan. BJ, go give Father Mulcahy a shot. Hawkeye, he gives Hawkeye the tough job. I mean, you know, he tells BJ, you take care of Father Mulcahy, and I'll talk to the cook. Oh, Hawkeye, meanwhile, you give a shot to several hundred people. Like, that guy, he maybe could have dispensed that list of tasks a little more evenly, yes, for Pete's sakes.
Yeah, that's the real reason I don't particularly love this episode, because I know that the MASH show kind of skirts around the actual number of people who are on staff. But as you say, there's about 100 people there, right?
So minimum 100 people.
We see Hawkeye talking Yeah, we see Hawkeye talking to what, like seven, and he has one line later in the show that says, "Hey, I still have to do like 15 more people." But really, one guy doing 100 people, and they don't like have an announcement to call them all to the mess.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're gonna make Hawkeye walk around.
And
yeah,
Hawkeye do the other half.
Yeah,
it's like, come on, this doesn't make any sense.
Hawkeye has to track everybody down. Yeah.
Right, that's not how it would work in a real world.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Alan Alda wrote it and directed it, and he gives himself a lot to do. It's very smart. So he goes to give a shot to Frank, and as you might expect, Frank is a complete ninny about it. He's a hypochondriac. He's worrying about things. He fights off getting the shot. He mentions this is kind of a little grim little piece of trivia, and I almost hated to mention it. But Frank Burns mentions that he has a mysterious lump under his sternum. And he says, that's not supposed to be there. That is what Larry Linville passed away from. He had a tumor, a cancerous tumor, under his sternum. And he died due to complications of that later on, which is, you know, like, okay. I mean, there's only so many things that you could maybe mention in terms of weird symptoms that you can't quite pinpoint, but it is a little on the grim side that he happens to mention the very thing that he ended up passing away from. And then the other thing, on a more lighter note, in this scene, on a more lighter note, he asks Hawkeye, Hawkeye asks him to give him the shot. He gives it to him. He shoots it, and then Frank says, "You broke the needle off in me, didn't you?" Now, how does that, is that a thing? That sounds like that would be a pretty big deal for a hunk of a metal needle to get broken off in your skin. Like, when he first said it on the show, I got terrified that that was something that could even happen. Now, I've always been pretty good with needles. I don't get that freaked out by them. But just the idea that like a needle could get broken off subcutaneously really is terrifying. And if it was broken off in Frank's butt, like, could he even sit down? Wouldn't that be stabbing him in the rear? It gives me the shivers.
Yeah, it's possible. I've heard of people, needles breaking off. But yeah, if it did, Hawkeye would definitely have to go in and grab it and pull it out, or rush him to the OR to get it pulled out. Because yeah, he couldn't sit down. I think it was just a sign of him overreacting of how much it hurt and how much Hawkeye didn't care that it felt like it was left in there. But yeah, it's, you would know. A needle would be left in your butt.
It's like David Cronenberg kind of stuff. To have a big hunk of metal stuck in you. It's just, oh my God.
That's his face.
Oh, God. It's awful.
One thing during Frank's scene, I wanted to ask you, did you ever play marbles as a kid?
No, I never did. Marbles was kind of just, no, never really. I had them as a sort of like a play thing, but like never, I never played a game. And I know he mentions there's a lump. It's not like an Aggie, more like an Emmy, which I knew enough to know those are marble terms. But
I don't know. I don't know what that means. I mean, and I looked them up and I couldn't really find an explanation, but I guess that they're different. There's the big one and the little one, right? So there's one of them's an Aggie and one of them's an Emmy.
But I guess so.
I never played marbles either. I always had them for like Chinese checkers. But it's just like, wow, that's one of those things where kids from the 20s, 30s, 40s did used to play marbles and they would know what a Aggie and an Emmy were. But it was like, to me, totally over my head.
Yeah. It was one of those things. I was like, that's a reference I don't fully understand, but I know the context. So, okay. Hawkeye.
Well, and one other thing in Frank's scene drew my attention to the background. And now since I saw it, I see it all the time. There's somebody, I don't know if it was Kelly or not, but there's somebody giving somebody a haircut in the back.
Yes.
And since I saw that episode and I've watched all of season 5, it happens all the time.
Yes, because there's a lot of haircuts going on. Yeah,
yeah. The supporting cast is like, just grab a chair and a blanket and pretend you're giving somebody a haircut. It's just like, Okay, but there was a barber because in the bug out episode, they pulled down the barber pole. And that was maybe from the movie or something, but there was a barber. And just like, well, maybe Kelly or somebody is good at cutting their hair and they want somebody just to do it. It's just one of those things that now I see it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed that, I mean, they've never really, once they got rid of the barber officially, I mean, obviously they have one because people are getting haircuts, but we never see them ever again. So maybe Nurse Kelly makes money on the side or something, giving haircuts, or other people give each other haircuts. But yeah, once if you pay attention to it, you'll notice in the back, it's always a nurse giving a man a haircut. That's almost always what it is. So yeah, that seems to be a thing, like a background piece of the director. You're like, oh, you know, have some of the extras sit here in the back and do this. So yeah, you know, life goes on at the 477. So Margaret gets visited by Hawkeye, and of course she's initially blows him off because she thinks he's just having a joke. And then he tries to look at her eyes, and then he says, let's go outside. This bulb is too yellow. And that dawns on her. She's like, you know, oh, you're serious, aren't you? And, you know, he says, oh, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't have to, whatever. And then they get into this conversation about that Margaret is getting letters from Donald Penobscot's family, which is not inviting her very warmly to the family. Penobscot's mother mentions that she knew two Houlihans, one of whom was the chauffeur, who they had to let go because he drank. And the other was a nice girl who lives in the state hospital now. So obviously they're not too keen on Margaret joining the family. And that is obviously, it's agitating Margaret, and they talk about it a little, but then Hawkeye kind of ruins it by simultaneously acting very professional and then also acting like a total lech. And of all the scenes of Hawkeye doing something that in our modern parlance is completely unacceptable, this is about as far as he's ever gone in terms of how disrespectful he is to Margaret. And luckily it turns around because Margaret lets him know how completely inappropriate this is.
Yeah. This is my least favorite Hawkeye and Margaret scene of all time, because he just comes in and he's a total lech, and then he gets pissed that she's mad.
Yeah.
He says something like, you know, I'm trying to show you a little appreciation. And it's like, the hell you are. You're ogling her and you're just insulting her. And I just doubt that she would even say, like, can I confide in you? I would think that she would go to Potter or maybe, I don't know, it's the nurses, BJ, somebody else. It just seems like it never rings true to me when I'm watching it in order that this scene would happen. She would say, you know, I'm not going to tell you, you know, I just have this problem. I don't know. I don't like it. It rubs me the wrong way. And you say that it's bad for us now, but I remember watching it like in the 70s and the 80s thinking, oh God, you are a lech. This is awful. So it was never any good. He knows. I think he overplays it, right? He's trying to be a lech and show us that he's not a great guy. And then he tries to turn around and say, respect, simple respect. That's the best part of it, is her lines, right?
Yes. Oh, by far. Yes.
Simple respect. I expect nothing more and I'll accept nothing less. And I feel like that's a Loretta Swit-ism, and it's kind of a Margaret-ism. That's like the days of hot lips are over, and I stop lecturing on me, stop Googling me. Stop it. I'm the major and I demand respect. And then of course Hawkeye, to his credit, shuts up and says, okay, sorry, you got me there. So that's good, but ugh.
Right, and he even points out that attitude, he says, not those words, but that attitude would work with Donald's mother, you know, simple respect. Right. And it might be that Alan Alda wrote this scene to get to that moment. Yes, you're correct, in that even when I was a kid, I knew that Hawkeye's really out of line, like really, really out of line to do this. And it's only because these two are, you know, they're not, I mean, are they friends at this point? They're getting there. They're not capital F friends.
Right. Yeah. I think this is a good example of one of those bad instances where everybody gets along off screen. So they want to try to get along on screen, when Margaret shouldn't take this crap from him at all. You know, I think she's, she's downplayed that way by him because he wrote it and directed it. But I think it leads to them becoming better friends. And then, of course, next year they become, you know, they become friends. But yeah. right now I think she's more like, you are way out of line.
Yeah, yeah. I do love at the end of the scene where they have this nice, you know, moment, and then Hawkeye again ruins it where he says, you want to give me a shot? And he and she goes, buzz off. And then he says, Hawkeye goes, just asking. And then Loretta Swit does this, like, she doesn't have, it's not a line, but she makes like this kind of guttural sound when he says, just asking. She kind of goes like, ugh, like that. Like she can't, and she kind of like her arms, her like arms pop up a little, and it makes me laugh every time I see it because it's so like an honest actor reaction of just like, she doesn't even have a line. It's just like, it's like, just get out. Just, you know, you generally don't see Margaret make those kinds of comedy sounds, but it's very funny to me when she does it because she's mostly turned away from the camera. So you don't even see her face, but there's just something about the sound. When I watched this episode with the subtitles on, they don't even subtitle it. There's nothing there because it's not a real line. It's just, she just kind of goes like, ugh, like that. It chases him out of the tent. So then wounded arrive and we are in pre-op and we see that this patient is pretty much missing an entire stomach. And how does that happen? And Potter says, well, he's a tank driver. And he says, when one of those shells gets inside, it just ricochets around and chews up everything in its path, which is an incredibly grotesque kind of way of describing it. But of course, a very Colonel Pottery way of doing it because when he's seen this kind of thing. And they look at it, Hawkeye consults, and then he's got the great line about, let's have BJ do it. He's the closest we have to an expert. And BJ's like, expert? I've never done this. I've only read about it. And Hawkeye says, that put you one up on us. And then they do this thing where he's like, you know, what if we send him to Seoul? What if he dies on the way? Well, all right, you know, take your time. Think about it. What are you going to do? You know, and then we all know that BJ's going to do it. Hawkeye knows that BJ's going to do it, but he just needs that little nudge to take it on.
Yeah, and I like this part about how call back to the first scene where BJ gets the non-nudist magazines wrapped in brown paper, right?
Yep.
Raider's like, they should disguise that more. It's like, it's a medical journal, and it's about a gastrectomy, which is like the removal of a stomach, right? So that's quick callback to right now. He's started to read that report and how now he's got that magazine or the journal, and he's going to do the surgery while reading the actual step-by-step, which just boggles my mind that you would, you know, try to create a model by reading the directions, but that's different than trying to sew up somebody's stomach. Oh, I can't imagine.
So we see BJ preparing as he's literally reading the book about what to do as one of the nurses is holding it up for him. And he even makes a joke about, let's skip to the end of this operation and see how it comes out. In the meantime, Hawkeye goes to visit Father Mulcahy. And Father Mulcahy is horrified to learn that because of his hepatitis, he can't give the Eucharist to anyone because he'll infect them all. And by the way, there's this one little piece of set detail. He's got this glass of orange juice. And after he takes a swig of it, he puts it up on the window. And for a half second, I was like, wait, what? Because how can you put things on a windowsill on a tent? There's no windowsills. And then if you look closely, you'll see that for some reason, Father Mulcahy has a shelf on his windowsill. I don't know how he would have that exactly, because presumably his tent, like the other guys, is canvas. But nevertheless, he has this shelf there, and at least far enough that he can keep a picture on it and put up his glass of orange juice. But it's a thing that you've never seen anybody do in the swamp because they don't have windowsills.
I never noticed that, but you're absolutely right. His head should be just as mobile as everybody else's.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't know why he's able to. But I mean, I guess you could maybe put it in yourself or something. And it's such a ridiculous, you know, small detail. But it was just so funny the way he just so effortlessly puts the glass. I'm like, wait, how is he doing that? Like, how is that tent? How does it work that way? So Father Mulcahy,
I didn't notice that part, but I noticed the stage direction that he has to put the orange juice somewhere because he pops up and argues with Hawkeye, right?
Yep,
so he had to get the juice out of his way.
Yep.
As the stage direction. And that's what I noticed.
Yeah. And then he said he argues with Hawkeye because he initially says, you know, I want to keep you know, the people in the tent, their souls are in my charge. He takes this obviously very seriously, and yes. He wants to be able to dispense his comfort to people, but he can't if he wants to get them sick. And then he sort of, you know, kind of flips around where Hawkeye says, maybe we can work out a schedule where maybe people can go light on the sinning to give you a break. And then Father McKay, he's like, you know, I'll hear confessions and that's it. Nobody's pushing me around. So he completely kind of does a 180 for no good reason in this scene, which is very funny. And then Hawkeye goes to visit Klinger in the kitchen. And Klinger is got KP duty because he got in another fight with Zale, another, you know, scene that we never got to see, although we've seen lots of fights. And Klinger is just furious about it and cannot keep himself under control while Hawkeye's trying to examine him. And at one point he gets so mad, he throws a bowl full of oranges, barely missing Hawkeye. And Hawkeye says, well, luckily I'm in a permanent duck. And it's so funny because, you know, we've mentioned this in other episodes. They complain about that they don't get any fresh food at the 477th. It's all powdered. Yeah. Well, there's fresh oranges. There's lettuce. There's all sorts of stuff. Like, this is, you know, I even think I see some turnips in the background. Maybe like, there's fresh food here. I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very convenient to not have it when you don't need it, when it feeds the story.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, hey, there's at least some oranges there. That's not too bad. So finally, Hawkeye literally like pins Klinger up against the fridge, puts his leg up against him, and then Klinger says, I find out if I have hepatitis, I'm going to kiss Zale on the mouth, which is a great, great retort there. Now we're back to surgery, and we see that BJ is performing this very tricky surgery. Now, he says at one point that, and I found this in the trivia section, which cannot always be trusted on IMDb, but I'm bringing this up for a particular reason. It says in the trivia, during the surgery, BJ says that he is connecting the man's ileum to the esophagus. This would not only leave the patient without a stomach, as BJ and Potter states, the shell had taken out the patient's stomach, but since the ileum is the last segment of the small intestine, it would leave the man with no ability to digest or absorb food and nutrients. So that kind of seems like a big deal. That this man would be left with no way to take in food. Now, I wondered, is this trivia bit real? I mean, BJ does have the line, but I mean, is that accurate? So I consulted one of MASHcast's staff physicians. Name
a lot more homework than I did.
Yeah,
I was to do it too. But
I was fascinated. You know, we've got doctors on the on staff here. So I reached out to Dr. Ange, who you will hear on this this season later on. So anyway, this is what Ange said regarding this operation. So we'll start with anatomy. GI tract goes esophagus, stomach, small intestine, duodenum, then jejunum, I think, then ileum, large intestine, also called the colon. So if you directly connected the esophagus to the ileum, the patient would have no stomach or duodenum or jejunum. You couldn't really survive, at least not without intravenous nutrients, which I don't think was around back then. Now there are times when a section of the esophagus is damaged that people will interpose a section of the intestine, usually a section of the colon, into making a new makeshift esophagus. He says, I need to watch the episode again. Maybe BJ is somehow making some sort of new stomach out of a portion of the ileum. I don't know if a direct connection would work. It would basically be the equivalent of something called a short bowel syndrome. Hope that helped. Thank you very much, Dr. Ange. I feel so much more educated now than I did when I started this episode.
Okay, so when in the very first scene, the magazine, the journal that BJ gets, talks about a total gastrectomy in 1949.
Right.
And that is a partial or total removal of the stomach.
Mm.
So if the person survived the partial or total removal of the stomach, some way the doctor, the surgeon must have created a makeshift esophagus or stomach, right? So the ileum is the part of the small intestine. He must have not, you know, again, the model model airplane analogy doesn't really work, but if he's cutting, and I think he has a line about the tank, the not the bullet, but the, what was it? The charge that the took away most of the guy's stomach. Anyway,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's clearly connecting the the lining from the stomach to the duodenum or the jejunum or whatever it is, and doing the best he can. So there had to be some way to make the patient survive that process. He must have created some sort of makeshift stomach.
Right. So the line about that he's connecting the ileum to the esophagus is not strictly accurate, and that he obviously is giving the patient some form of a new stomach made out of parts basically available to him. But it's right. not like you can lose your stomach and then they're just like, all right, we'll just join the two ends. No, your stomach, yeah. Your stomach has a particular use, and you can't just lose it. You got to come up with something. So there you go. So here's that's MASHcast Medical Corner, everybody. So now on the complete opposite end of that spectrum, we have Hawkeye continuing to give the needles, and he gives a shot to Radar. This scene, this entire scene, was always cut in syndication.
Wow.
Yes. I never saw it until the DVDs, and I will say this is the best scene in the episode. I like this episode, but this is the best scene in the episode. Because it is such a great moment between Hawkeye and Radar, that Radar is so worried about that he is not the kind of guy that the other guys that he hangs out with are, that he's worried there's something wrong with him. And Hawkeye could not be a more gentle, fatherly, big brothery kind of person. And this was the kind of thing that when I saw the DVD, I was like I couldn't love the show anymore. And then this is a scene that was cut. Because this scene is so wonderfully performed by both actors. Wonderfully written, directed, and then acted by both Alda and Berghoff.
Yes, yes. This is a great scene. And I just have that little asterisk that, okay, but a year later or 2 years later, he says, you know, just go to town and have sex with a prostitute.
Well, right? We'll get to that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, okay, this is so touching and so heartfelt. And yet, I don't know. It just seems, knowing what I know, it just leaves a little bit of taste in my mouth.
Well, let me ask you this, Russell. Let's say there's a movie you really love, right? It doesn't even matter what it is. Let's say there's a movie you really love. Then they do a really terrible sequel. Does the really terrible sequel ruin your enjoyment of the first film, in your mind? I mean, there's probably different examples. Some do, some don't. But generally,
yeah, I would say generally it does leave a kind of, oh, why did they have to do that? Yeah, okay. A little bit. But I can try to forget it and like, yeah. If everybody's involved, right? So as this in this case they were, then yes, it does bother me. If it was, you know, like the young Butch and Sundance, no. I
don't know. Tom Berenger and Liam Peck. I am able generally, I think there is something to be said for, not to get too far down a sort of side path here, but I think there is something to the idea that, yeah, if you have the original cast, it ruins it more than others. But like Jaws, right? Everyone loves Jaws. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I've seen it literally hundreds of times. The fact that there are three terrible Jaws movies after that, doesn't affect my love of the first one. The first one works just as well as it ever has, and I'm able to just be like, yeah, they did other ones and those are not as good, but whatever. Not to preview it too far, the most negative I will be on any episode of MASH is that episode that we're going to get to in season 6, Fallen Idol. It is probably my least favorite episode of MASH for the reason you state, because this scene is so wonderful, and then that episode just takes a big whiz all over it. But in the moment, I'm still able to enjoy the scene for what it is, because it is, again, it is so wonderfully done. I love that Hawkeye is able to explain to Radar, look, you just have to be you. And it doesn't matter for you. You're never going to be comfortable sleeping around. It's not a judgment. It's not saying one way is better than the other way, because obviously Hawkeye sleeps around. But for you, that's never going to work. You have to be true to who you are. And the line about, you know, give her a gift that you've been waiting your whole life. It's so beautiful and poetic. And I'm flummoxed as to why, when they cut it in syndication in my local market, like, you wouldn't cut the Klinger scene. Not that that's not good, but you would cut this part out. Right. This part is so good.
Yeah. No, and I'm not just trying to say that this scene is not good. And it's wonderful. It's just as good as you say it is. And if I'm in the right mood, it's just kind of get, I get kind of clumpy about it, but it's still like, oh, but then they, you know, 2 years later, they kind of ruined it, but let's not think about that.
Yeah. Right? Let's not think about that. Yeah.
It's very cheap. And while I'm watching the episode, I often think, and you know me well enough to know, I sometimes think, oh, what if they had used BJ here instead of Parker? Oh, what if they had done it this way? And this is one of those scenes where it could not have worked any other way. It would have had to have been Hawkeye and Radar, because they've known each other the longest. They love and I think respect each other, and they've got that relationship. Whereas I think the BJ might have worked better with Margaret, because she might have confided with him, because he's an upright guy. He has not done the kind of, I mean, let's just say it. He hasn't done this kind of shit that Hawkeye and Trapper used to do to her, right? Mm-hmm. So she might have opened up to him in a way that I don't really believe quite as well that she opens up to Hawkeye. And then Frank could have gone around and seen Father Mulcahy, and that would have been kind of more of a contrast, that if Frank had gone in and said, well, Father, you're not allowed to do this, and then he might have said, well, nobody's going to push me around. And it would have been maybe a stronger Father Mulcahy scene if it had been Frank trying to give him a shot, right? So I sometimes think about things like that. In this case, however, it was perfect. It was Hawkeye and Radar, and they both hit their marks literally and figuratively, and it was, there's no complaints for me about that scene at all. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really beautiful. Again, like you said, it has to be Hawkeye. I mean, him and Radar have had some real heart-to-hearts. They had in the previous year about, you know, Radar turning to Hawkeye for advice about his mom dating somebody. And then there was the season 3 episode where Radar admits to Hawkeye that he's a virgin, and Radar is nice to him about that. So, yeah, it can only be with these two performers, and they crush it. They absolutely crush it. Back in surgery, BJ is finishing up, and it seems like it's going really well. And in fact, it's gone so well that BJ decides to get drunk at the O Club, and he's singing and dancing. He grabs Kelly at one point and sort of stumbles around, and Hawkeye finds him and he says, yeah, I got to give you the shot. And then he takes his pants off, collapses over a table. He calls himself the world's most wonderful surgeon. I'm the Hippocrates of Weizhongbu. And he pulls his pants down and collapses over the table. Hawkeye gives him a shot, pulling his pants down in front of everybody. And if it's funny, if you notice, right as that scene gets cut, right as they wrap it up, he's not dancing with Nurse Kelly, he's dancing with Nurse Baker. But right as that scene gets cut, three people in the O Club, who are kind of backgrounders, surround the unconscious BJ, and they are clearly about to pour their beer all over him. You see their beer cans start to tilt, which I think, that seems like kind of a slightly dicky thing to do.
I don't know. I've never been in a fraternity, but it feels or sounds like something that men would do to other men.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, but I mean, poor BJ's going to wake up, sticky of covered in beer. That doesn't sound fun at all. So then later on, Hawkeye has just given his shot to Colonel Potter. And then Colonel Potter, of course, does the same for Hawkeye. And it's here that they deal with the whole, reason why Hawkeye is in such a physical distress. And Colonel Potter, being again the greatest commander anybody could ever want, tells this amazing story. And he says, back when I was younger, I was short, not like I am now, which is great. It's a great self-deprecating line. And he talks about that he used to try and beat up bigger guys because he was insecure about his size. And then he realizes, he says, I was just wanting to hurt myself and using their rib cage to hurt my hands. And, he kind of ferrets out that Hawkeye is upset about Vernon Parsons. He's angry, and he's, gives some great advice. And he says, look, you just got to worry about competing with yourself. And he says, if in your case, that's tough enough. And then they share a Fig Newtons and scotch. Which, yeah. It sounds like a horrible combination, especially if you follow Colonel Potter's advice. They're great if you dunk them, which just sounds terrible.
Like scotch?
Not particularly. So if I like scotch, yeah, it would make
the difference. Yeah, every time I watch that episode, I think, oh, I should try that. Fig Newtons, because I like Fig Newtons.
I like Fig Newtons,
yeah. And then I realized, oh, I don't like scotch.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe if you like scotch and you like Fig Newtons. It just sounds I don't know, things dipped in alcohol. I don't know. I'm not a big drinker really in generally, so maybe it doesn't hold any appeal to me. But then he gives Hawkeye some advice. He says, look, give yourself a little present. Write Vernon Parsons an anonymous letter. And they start, you know, sort of workshopping it about what should we say. And he's like, well, he says, I'm going to say that I saw him cheating on a medical exam. And then he says, no. Potter says, no. Tell him you're filing a paternity suit. And that it's even, you know, malpractice suit. And then finally a paternity suit. And then Hawkeye ends the scene with saying, doctor, I can walk, which seems to suggest that his problem, he's already feeling better. Once again, Colonel Potter, best commander in history.
Yeah. And see, and that's the other reason. It's just like, it doesn't hold up. It just, it ties up nice with a bow, but it just seems like a 20-minute problem that, you know, if it had veered off a different way, if Father Brocade didn't have hepatitis, then we would have gotten Sydney to come in and talk to Hawkeye about his back problem, right? And it just seems like, oh, come on. And Colonel Potter hears the scuttlebutt during the day that he's Hawkeye's pissed at incredibly average Vernon Parsons, but nobody says, oh, him again, or oh, you still talking about that Vernon Parsons guy, or something like that. It just seems like very convenient that, oh, the back pain that you've had for 3 days that you never mentioned Vernon Parsons about, send him a malpractice letter or a paternity suit and you'll feel fine and Hawkeye is cured. I mean, it just seems a little bit too pat for, I guess I'm expecting too much from MASH. It seems like it could have been a little bit more and it would have been better.
I hear you, but I don't know where.
I'm sure you disagree with me, but
no, I hear what you're saying. I do feel like I can't imagine how you expand this without cutting, you know, like a scene here and there. I mean, like you cut like a Klinger scene, or you cut, I don't know what, like you could cut the Frank scene down, but I also know that, you know, as a writer, you're trying to give the cast all everybody something to do, you know, so you don't want to cut a scene. So yeah, I mean, obviously they would kind of do something similar with the Bless You Hawkeye episode, which would also be solved in basically 24 minutes. And then the one other time they would do it was in the final episode where they had lots of time. So yeah. They maybe, you know, yeah, I could see it, the Vernon Parsons thing could be considered as a little rushed. I can understand that. And then especially when you realize that the ending scene is just pure silliness, where it's BJ who is sleeping off a hangover and it's Hawkeye who is up and at him early in the morning. And to prove that he's kind of the greater physical specimen, he does a handstand and then completely collapses and falls onto BJ, and he complains about my head, my back, and they just end up in a big heap. It's very, very silly. Just a little bit of physical comedy to end the episode with. You know, maybe they could have found room for another little Vernon Parsons bit in there or something. But you know, otherwise, it's just kind of a nice silly way to end the show.
Well, I kind of liked how it calls back to the very first scene where. Yes. Reversed it, right? So Hawkeye's in bed and BJ's is working out, and now it's BJ in bed and Hawkeye is exercising. So it's kind of like, okay, so Hawkeye's cured and BJ is hungover, and then it ends. So we're back to the status quo, and that's all fine at the 4, 7, 7.
So a day in the life. Yeah. So, all right. Well, okay, for hepatitis. Oh, the one other thing I wanted to mention, there really are no guest actors in this episode except for one. The nurse, the anesthetist, she has one line she mentions to BJ during the surgery. That's played by an actress named Barbara James, who just has a kind of a, you know, weird collection of movie and TV roles. Her first film was 1941's Death Cell, which is I have no idea what that is other than it's some sort of horror movie. But obviously she goes back pretty far if she was in a movie in 1941, and here she is in a 1977 episode of MASH, but other than that, there weren't a whole lot of other credits that I noticed, and she didn't have too many more credits after this. So, hepatitis, Russell, do you have a favorite line or joke from the show?
I think I have a couple favorites, but we've talked about most of them. I really laugh out loud every time Klinger says that if you find out that I have hepatitis, I'm going to kiss Zale right on the mouth. That just makes me laugh every time. But I love the scene with Frank, and when Frank is like all, well, even more hypochondriac than Hawkeye is. And he says, feel under my armpits. And Hawkeye says, not for $5. That always makes me laugh.
The way Alda delivers that is great. Not for $5. Like, it's just that is the least favorite thing I want to do right now, Frank, is feel under your armpits. Even though he's a doctor, that's just, no, I'm not doing that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite actually is earlier on when he gets the mail delivery and he is mad that he didn't get any nudie magazines. And then Radar tries to, lift his spirits where he says, I could give you one of Major Burns's popular mechanics. Sometimes the ads go pretty far. And Hawkeye just disgustedly says, Radar, a picture of a three-way toilet valve does not go pretty far. Just, I love that. That's exactly the kind of ad you would imagine in a popular mechanics. Oh, but what's exciting to the people who read popular mechanics? So, a three-way toilet valve. And I love the way he just kind of goes pretty far. Like, he kind of mocks the pretty far, just like that. It just makes me laugh every time I hear it. Radar is so proud of himself that he's trying to help Hawkeye, and Hawkeye just is just completely dismissed.
Yeah. His scale is totally different.
Yeah, exactly. Scale is completely off the chart. So, well, Russell, thank you once again for joining us here on MASHcast. You'll be back next season, I'm sure. It's always enjoyable to have you on and great talking to you. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always a pleasure. I get to watch the whole seasons, and then I sit down and watch my episode like twice to take notes and things. So I'm looking forward to season 6 with. But well, let's get through season 5 first with the end of Larry Linville. You know, I don't know if I've ever told you this story. I met Larry Linville. He was on a college tour, speaking tour, in 1984, late 84 or early 85. And he came to my school, and it was the largest audience we'd ever had for one of these guest speakers. And he stood there and just talked about his experience, and he talked about how some of the gripes that they would have for the first few seasons, and how there was an air vent in the roof of the bus, and so they had to film around it because they didn't want to show it. But when they did scenes in the bus, it was so stifling hot that they wanted to have like a vent. So they had one up there. They had to figure out how to hide it when they were filming upwards. And anyway, he talked about his experience afterwards and how he tried to get out of the show before he was typecast, but really it didn't work because he was typecast and he wasn't able to do much other than like guest star appearances on Love Boat. And then he was doing... I don't know if it's called summer stock anymore, but like summer theater, he would go around and he'd work at local theaters. Like, I can't remember what he said he was in, but you know, things like The Odd Couple or whatever that would be touring around. And he was very interesting. And I think he signed my poster. I mean, a whole group of us were like around and just starstruck by him. Right.
Yeah,
so, and then he died while I was in Japan, so I never really got to meet him or have his autograph again. But he was a very nice, not like Frank, but then he like laughed the same way, right? So he would tell a funny story, and then he'd be like, and you're like, that's kind of the creepy Frank laugh. So I'll never forget. It was a great evening of MASH memories and just him talking to us. So. Was great.
That's marvelous. No, I don't think you've ever told me that story. That's great. That's I've mentioned on the show before. I ran into him on the street once in New York, and I did not say hi. And that is one of the no joke great regrets of my life that I didn't take that moment, because now he's gone and I'll never get that chance. And I think he would have probably appreciated somebody at my age. This would have been in the 90s, my age, knowing who he was, you know? So I always don't pass up those opportunities, everybody. So that's great. That's super that you got to do that. That's I would have loved to have heard something like that. That would have been, as you said, I would have eaten that up, you know?
Yeah.
I would have been like,
it was amazing.
Yeah, so, oh my God. So, well, why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Well, right now I am mostly on, blogspot.com, and there'll be a link for that. That's Friends of Justice. I'm doing my own fan fiction, Justice Leagues, and I've got another one coming up here in August. I just did my 50th fan fiction issue. Hooray! Woo! And 51 just came out recently. So 51 issues of my own creation based on the satellite era Justice League.
Yes, so pre-crisis.
If you like pre-crisis. Them and you... Pre-crisis, and if you like, pre-crisis, And I think Alex Ross calls it like the golden days or something, like before Iris Allen is killed by the in the Flash, and before Firestorm joins the Justice League. It's those the golden years. Now, and I have nothing against Firestorm per se, but that was the timing, right? So Iris is murdered, and things started to go to pot.
You make Shag wince with that, but he doesn't listen to MASHcast, anyway, so he won't hear it anyway. Anyway, that's where I am mostly now. Okay. Okay. So, of course,
he knows how I feel. He keeps telling me I should have Firestorm join my Justice League, but it's like, I really don't want to kill Iris Allen West, so I don't think I will.
Do your own comic, Shag. So, of course, you can find back episodes of this show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. We're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. And then finally, if you want to support the Find Water Podcast Networks, go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Daniel Ulrich, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Rich Ram, Mike Thomas, Michael Porter, Joe Perino, Billy Shulman, Dennis Bailey, Kara Kay, and Tim English. Thanks, everybody. Really appreciate the support. So that's going to do it. We'll be back later. But until then, that is all.
How dare you come in here on the pretext of giving me a shot and then stand there ogling me as though I were a sideshow attraction?
Boy, I show you a little appreciation and you hit the roof. What do you want from me?
Respect. Simple respect. I expect nothing more and I'll accept nothing less.